Hi, I'm Diane. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to welcome everybody from out of town and my dear friend Eileen, who's here, and all the new people. I'd like to welcome all you new people. And I thought we were going to do birthdays, so we're going to be doing birthdays soon, and happy birthday if you have a birthday. But I know together the most important thing is that one day at a time thing. I went to a huge meeting. I got sober in Chicago. I had 4 months sober, and there were like 10,000 people there. It was probably, it wasn't Soldier's Field. I'm kind of grandiose sometimes. It was where the Bulls changed. You know, they went to another venue. I think it's around the University of Chicago, and there was a lot of people there. And then I had some friends there, and I just went by myself because I had my husband who was not in the program and my kids. But I saw a couple of people I knew, and I couldn't believe it. You know, they did all the birthday countdown, and the first time I heard, does anybody have one day? And I was still sitting, and everybody stood up. So we're just really blessed to have this day. Hi, Jasmine. I see you back there. I've been accused of going to AA meetings and opening the history books and stuff like that, because there's been times in my sobriety when that's the best I could do. So I love these books, Dr. Bob and the Old Timers. I love the history of AA, and I love the 30s and 40s. And so I'm going to open this up with a story from 1938, and Clarence, one of us, was starting the first AA meeting in Cleveland, and he decided that he would invite a reporter, this is before the big book, before the tradition, so these were all growing pains for Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's why I get to come in here today and there's no riots. Well, anyway, the reporter was drunk. So there was a riot. They didn't want to let him in. And the reporter did such a fine job, and this is before the Jack Alexander article came out, that one meeting went from 300 to 800 AAs. And it's so cool. It's so cool how this thing works. So my sobriety date's April 15th, 1993. I grew up in Chicago. It was a three flat. I lived in the same neighborhood. I had the same friends, and it was absolutely wonderful. I actually went home to visit, and it had been about 20 years, and I reconnected with some of these people. Although, when you grow up with the same people, what can happen is you kind of get put in a category. So I was the unpopular category, as was my next door neighbor friend. And, we had our own group, though. That was kind of the fun thing. So this three flat building, we had alcoholics in it. And thank you so much, Laura. My story is so similar to yours, just minus one husband, though. I had two. So, in the basement apartment, my grandmother was a drunk, and she was a hallucinatory alcoholic. Stories were they had cut her stomach open so many times, she had so many surgeries, and it was all alcohol-induced. She never got sober, but interestingly enough, she married a man who became a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in the early 40s, And then my mother has a story. This is the first time I heard of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was a kid. My mother has this story where on the west side of Chicago, this whole building was getting sober. And, they used to sponsor each other and real cool stuff. And this man that would become a step-grandfather of mine that I would never meet, gave my mom her first camera. That's why she always spoke so fondly of him, because he was such a good person. And it's, he was a member of AA. We can imagine what he was like when he was drinking. Unfortunately, he didn't stay sober. I did hear of Alcoholics Anonymous another time, and I'm going to fast forward a little and hopefully come back to the right spot. My cousin joined AA. And he invited me, and this is when I was married, and I had three kids, and He invited me to a bar to meet his AA friends, and everybody was drinking. And obviously, he was not in AA. When he was 40 years old, I got the call from his wife that he died. So we buried him, and he had a 7-year-old daughter, and those were my kids, cousins. Even though I don't have brothers and sisters, they were still very close. The third person I met from AA was while I was drinking, and it was a summer day, and I was pushing my daughter in the swing, and I looked at this guy, and he had his son, and I said, you know what, this guy, he drinks. I'm going to go up to him and start talking about, that I want to go home and have a glass of wine, and I just can't wait to get out of this park. And I did that. And he 12-stepped me. He was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, back to the three flat. I have some funny stories where my girlfriend and I, you always have a town drunk, but in Chicago we have a neighborhood drunk. So the neighborhood drunk lived across the street, but he used to pass out in our gangway. So my next door neighbor, my best friend Ellen, and I were always told to step right over him, but if it's 32 degrees, tell somebody so he doesn't freeze to death. And that's crazy. But I guess that's the acceptance of of the alcoholic. And so on the first floor was my uncle, and he was a heavy drinker. He kept to himself. He had three sons, and they were partiers, and they were older than me. I was born in 58. They were early 60s, so they were the Beatle era. They used to sit down on the front porch and play the guitar. And I was the only child, lived upstairs. My parents were not alcoholic. As a matter of fact, they used to have a snifter of Crevassier every Saturday night, and one of those snifters oftentimes was not finished, and that was totally amazing. My first drink was when I was 16, besides the hot toddies my dad used to give me, and we had a pajama party at my house, and there was a huge bottle of wine, and every time I tell the story, the bottle gets bigger and bigger. It was Greek wine, whatever that means, and I had my first drink from that bottle of wine that I can recall, and I got what you guys are talking about, the ease and comfort. Bill Wilson talks about coming back from the Navy and, right in the first paragraph, his story. And life started and happened for him, and then he discovered alcohol. And that's so appropriate, for this alcoholic. Because I wouldn't say I was having fun, but I felt like I was just in the middle of it all, in the middle of my own life. And I had a great childhood, and I discovered alcohol, and then alcohol started to do something for me that I didn't know about. It started to become a creditor, and it started to take away the things that I loved. So, for instance, I used to play the piano. Well, I didn't need to do that anymore. I quit the piano at 16, and I quit a lot of stuff. I didn't really pick up a book until I got sober again, and you know what book that would have been that I picked up? That big book. So, I just can tell you that I couldn't wait to do it again, and so I orchestrated another pajama party. Now I'm 16, and we're having a couple pajama parties, and that cold duck is getting old that I'm bringing up over, and I don't know where I got that. And then Saturday Night Fever came out, and now we're in the disco era. Discotheques are popping up all over Chicago, and I drove to Wisconsin because of the drinking age, and I said, I am not going to do this, right, Jim? I'm just going to get a fake ID, and it was handed to me. And the bouncer at the neighborhood disco said, hey, weren't you like 5 years younger than me? I'm like, no. So off we go. Off we go. Those were crazy times. I met both my husbands in a bar, not at the same time, of course. The first husband would become my husband awfully soon. He was a wonderful man, and he was from Cuba, baseball player, and then he started just, getting a degree and all that. But I met him when he was working you know, his job, and we got married really quick. It was, you know, it was a lot so that I could walk down the aisle in a beautiful Spanish wedding dress. It really was. That's kind of what I was thinking about, you know. I was pretty vain and pretty alcoholic. So I got to say that that marriage, we had a daughter, Vanessa, and she's actually flying in right now. She's flying in to see my mom, and we're going to visit. And her plane was delayed, or she said she wanted to come here. She basically was like what our speaker, Laura, just said, you know, it was kind of inconvenient to have a child. So I used to drop her off at my in-laws' house, and it used to snow and rain and sleet in Chicago. So that was my excuse, you know. And it kind of worked out good because my mother-in-law at the time, you know, wanted a daughter, you know. So she basically took her, and I gave her away, didn't I? So I had these cool jobs in Chicago, and I used to just screw them up, you know. I would always get on probation, and I worked downtown Chicago, and, you know, if it wasn't one thing, it was another. And that marriage lasted 7 years, and I decided I was tired of that marriage and went out and met my next husband in a bar, and that was kind of a whirlwind. And what happened there is he was a gambler, so I chose somebody that was, you know, emotionally unavailable to me, and we could practice our addiction together. And he also used some drugs, so that was just great. That's exactly what I was looking for. In that marriage, we had two daughters, and my drinking really started pretty much every night when I first picked up that drink. I wanted to drink every night if I couldn't. You know, I still wanted to. Sometimes I used to drink a half a gallon of Carlo Rossi, and just, I used to come out of the pass out. I don't remember blackout, but I'd come out of the pass out, and then I'd find one of my kids next to me. One time, you know, the one was 6 months old. She was an infant, and she had swallowed a whole bunch of Desitin. You know, that's what happens to the housewife and the mother that drinks at home. One time one of my daughters needed to go to the ER, and I was too drunk to take her. She was having an asthma attack. So, all right, I just described two daughters. Now let me go to the third one, and then enough of those horror stories. But, you know, my first daughter, I was on the phone holding her, having a glass of wine and smoking a cigarette, you know, right, all at the same time, and I dropped her on the floor. And if it weren't for a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous way down the road saying this was a man, he said he dropped his kid too, you know, I would have never admitted that. So my drinking progressed into hallucinations and brownouts and panic attacks, like my grandmother. As a matter of fact, my grandmother played the piano. I was really becoming my grandmother now, alcoholic and everything. And I had heard about AA from these three people, but that third one really had planted a seed. I didn't know about that, about how a person is at a park and used to drink like I wanted to drink and doesn't have to go home and drink. So I was kind of curious about that in the back of my head. But, you know, my mother used to tell me, Diane, just do it for your kids. Stop drinking for your kids. And I didn't have the power to do that. So, you know, I had the end is now coming, where I'm on the couch, the blinds are shut, we live across the street from school, I was unable to get my kids to school, my kids were 1.5, 3, and 7, and for whatever reason, I'm on the couch, and you know the story, I'm feeling better, but yet I need to try one more time. I need to see if I can do this one more time, because it was my greatest obsession ever since I started drinking, to drink like a normal drinker, like the book tells us. And I got up and I asked that husband to go out and get a bottle of wine, one bottle of wine. We were going to split it and have a nice dinner. And the minute I had a sip of wine, as you know, the manifestation of the craving has now occurred, and I have to have it. I sent him out to get another bottle, and of course I gave him my dinner. I didn't need to eat, so. And I woke up out of a crazy hallucination in the morning, and the next morning it was April 14th. And I was standing next to myself. I had an out-of-body spiritual experience, and the person next to me was choking. They had opened the refrigerator and started eating, because I really didn't eat. I drank always. And I started seeing this person next to me, and I looked in the refrigerator, and there was wine and a little bit of food and a little bit of who knows whatever. You know, I used to be afraid people used to find my grocery list at the store, like if I lose it, because it had, you know, wine and cigarettes, and then it had diapers, formula, and then the other stuff. And, you know, and that, again, that's the story of the housewife that drinks at home and the mother. So I called my mom, and I said, Mom, come on over and watch the kids. I'm going to AA. She's like, what? So I called the central office in Chicago, and I got a call back from a woman in my area who would eventually become my sponsor, but I didn't want to go to a meeting in my area. I needed to go outside of the area. So we were 10 minutes from downtown. My mom came over. She took two buses on a train, bless her heart. And I hopped on this bus in my lime green sweatpants and greasy hair. Yeah, and I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in downtown Chicago in the financial district. Although, fortunately, this meeting also is a huge building, and it went around the whole square block. So part of that Van Buren Street was Skid Row. So, you know, that's fine. I can relate. So I'm looking for a meeting on the 37th floor. I think it was the 37th floor. And it's a circular floor, and I'm going round and round and round. And then I didn't know where the meeting was, but I saw your triangle on the door. And I opened that door, and I saw the steps on the wall and the traditions on the wall, and I walked right over to you guys. You were sitting at a table, and I sat right down, and you said, hi, are you new? And I couldn't figure out how you knew that I was new. How would you know that? So I started talking about my panic attacks, and I got a promise right then and right there. A guy said, you know, I had panic attacks too, and if you do what we do, those things will go away. And I believed him, so I stayed for my first meeting, and I was going to stay anyway. And a man in a suit, a businessman, shared, and he gave the lead, and he told the story of an alcoholic, which is my story too. You know, we just have different narratives, you know, but we're still alcoholic. That meeting had laminated posters on every wall. So everywhere you look, you were going to see a slogan. Some guy named Miles did that. The one I saw was, be a miracle, not a nightmare. And that was the one that I lived by. And I thought to myself, how are you going to do that? Another one was, utilize, don't analyze. And I really liked that one. And the one that really, really made me feel comfortable was, alcoholism is an equal opportunity employer. You know, and it really did become my master. When I came into that meeting, I walked in step one, and I know I walked out in step two. I know that because when I went home, my mom said, how was the meeting? And I said, I think it's going to work because God's involved. And I hadn't had any communication with God except to say, God damn it. And then at the end, God help me. And, you know, that's what happened. I told that gambler husband of mine that I needed to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and he told me that I couldn't. So I didn't listen to him. Yay! I got my mom to come over every day. My mom came over every day. My mom came over every day. She's one of my AA angels. Then I would have three spiritual experiences within the next 2 weeks, which showed me that I already had a higher power, and that I was clearly on step three. I was going to turn everything over here. Real quick, I walked to the store, and this man had, and I wanted a drink, you know, this is early sobriety. And I had this man that I used to see had Vietnam swastikas all over him, and he was a Vietnam vet, and he came up to me and he said, "You know what today is?" I said, "No, what is it?" He said, "This was the day that my wife and child were killed by a drunk driver." And you know, I lost the craving to drink that day. And then there was another time when you guys told me to throw out vanilla and all that, and I was going to bake cake, so I'm not throwing out any vanilla. And, you know, I didn't know alcohol, there was vanilla, alcohol and vanilla. So I had a craving one time because I had the spout of the Kool-Aid, and I used to put my wine in there, and I had a craving, and I wanted to drink that vanilla. And then there was a knock at the door, you know. And I opened the door, and my husband's best friend came in, and I told him the whole thing. I said, "I'm alcoholic, I want a drink, blah, blah, blah." He sat down, he listened to me, and he was a member of Al-Anon. So I was really in good hands. I lost the craving for the drink that night. And then the third thing was, you guys told me, don't go where there's alcohol. Well, I'm just going to Chuck E. Cheese because my kids are having a birthday. My kids are having a birthday. So normally us mothers used to go in the bathroom in Chuck E. Cheese and drink rum and coke. And you know what? I didn't have to do that. I thought, wow, nobody's watching the kids. Let me go watch the kids. And I had a glorious time that day with the kids. I would have to work the steps. The meetings that I went to, we had 2,500 meetings in the Chicagoland area in 1993. And I had to work these steps because I had the same behavior sober that I had drinking. I used to wave the butcher knife around. My dad was a butcher by trade, and he left me all his knives. And I used to wave them around, and I used to swear. And you know what? My kids didn't deserve that. Whether or not the husbands do or not, that'd be a different story. We'll save that for another fellowship. But, you know, I think the thing about it was, is I was appalled. I was appalled at my behavior because those kids really didn't deserve that. I knew I had to work the steps. And the meetings that I was going to, we had two-step meetings a week. That woman in the neighborhood used to take me to a Monday night meeting, and she started having me secretary. We also baked cakes for natal birthdays and AA birthdays. I'd like to tell you about my first cake. You know how they say everything you do for the first time is like a really big deal in AA? Well, it really was. And I had baked drunk, so I don't know what was going on. But I put the frosting ingredients in the cake mix. And I put the cake mix ingredients in the frosting. So, you know, there's raw egg in our frosting here. The cake was pink. It was lopsided. I brought it to my AA meeting, and you guys said, "Keep coming back." But you also ate the cake. You also ate the cake. So, because we're like garbage cans, aren't we? Okay, moving along, I'm going to my fourth and fifth step now. I needed to do my fourth step, and it was, and I opened the 12 by 12, and I opened the big book, and I wrote everything down that I could think of that related to that. And what I really love in the 12 and 12 is it says that, you know, not once did I want to become a member of the family, a useful member of society, a worker among workers, or friend among friends. You know, as a matter of fact, of little real fellowship I knew very little of, and that was so poignant in my life. I was so self-centered, and that just almost brought me to tears. And then, you know, the joy of seeing myself and telling my sponsor, she came over on a Saturday and my kids took a nap at 10 a.m. That never happened, and that was God allowing me to do my fifth step. And, you know, that same week I did my fifth step, I had the first field trip with my oldest daughter, and we were going to the Art Institute of Chicago. So with all these kids, by the way, my blinds started to become open now. Remember I was telling you my blinds were shut? Now they're open. That's really huge, and you know, I didn't even realize what was happening. So I get on the bus with all the other mothers and kids. It was a small school, Catholic school across the street. And then and I look in everybody's eyes, and I got that feeling of, you know, this is the end of isolation for me, like it talks about in the fifth step. And that now I can feel a presence of God. And I really felt that, you know, it says whether you're atheist or agnostic, you can feel that presence of God. And if you do have a sense of God, it's going to deepen. And that's really what happened for me. So on that bus, I just really felt that I was part of the human race. And I just have joined the human race now. And the most spectacular thing is I looked on the back of the bus, and there was somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous there. you know, that's a keeper. I'm going to keep that story. So we're gonna move to California, and I'm not done with my ninth step. And one of my guys in my home group said, make sure to tell them you're new when you go to California. Make sure to tell them you're new. So when we moved to California, and I hadn't done my ninth step yet, I raised my hand and I said, I'm new. And I got invited to a 4th of July party. My home group then became the Hilltop Group in Martinez. And I got invited to that 4th of July party. And I became the secretary. Oh, that's where I met a few of you. And, you know, it was wonderful. My first person I got to ask was a drug addict because I just grabbed somebody from the Alano Club. And that's okay. So I'm in California, and I'm thinking I'm not going to do my ninth step. But once again, I hit a wall, and I've got to do my steps, you know. And sponsoring, working with others, it's just been absolutely wonderful. Dr. Bob talks about four reasons, you know, working with others, and I totally agree with this, you know, to avoid that possible slip, to give back something that was given to me, sense of duty. He was very dutiful, you know, as am I. And the other one is it's a pleasure. You know, I found it to be a pleasure always. Maybe not going into, you know, working with someone, but, you know, after it's all over, you know, I absolutely learned something. And I really, you know, the word sponsorship, it's not even the right word because I learned so much from you know, working with others. And oftentimes I have to say who's sponsoring who. And I say it all the time. Usually somebody calls me, I'm going exactly, it's the same thing. I'm going through the same thing. So, yeah, my kids are all out of the house now. This is what it's like today. What is it like today? I feel like I'm 21. And, oh, God, you know, I'm out with my kids, and I'm buying a whole bunch of purses one time, and my daughter goes, Mom, she takes the purse down, and she goes, you don't need all those purses. Yeah, you know, they're all in college, those kids, and a long time ago, I heard in an AA meeting, one guy said, I have three kids, and one's a brain surgeon, one's an astronaut, and one's something else, maybe an Indian chief, I don't know. So he said that he had nothing to do with it, you know, and I really like that. All I had to do in Alcoholics Anonymous is suit up and show up. And, you know, my best friend, Tom C. from San Francisco, one of them, you know, he didn't have any kids. He's gay, and he told me, Diane, they're not your kids. They're a gift from God anyway. You know, don't take it so seriously. Just do the best you can. So those three kids, when I'm telling you, they have kept me on my toes. Oh, my gosh. The middle one time I go into her room and the wind is coming in Martinez, and she's gone. And I'm like, holy shit, somebody just kidnapped my daughter. No! She orchestrated something out in Antioch where all her friends are going to get together and they're all going to go drink beer. You know, that's what happened there. So, oh my gosh, you know, I feel that I've absolutely been blessed, you know, in this program, just having all the tools to do whatever it is, you know, that I need to do at the time. And I think one of, you know, the best things that I can do is take that quiet time. For me, quiet time comes in different forms. It comes in forms of walking. It comes in form of art and music. And I just, you know, really need to do that. And I didn't do it for 2 days, you know, and I really felt that. I really felt that I was just running around from one thing to the other. So this morning, you know, I read one of my favorite things, you know, reading Bill's story, you know, and I'm looking in there and there's things that pop out at me like, you know, alcohol has become a necessity. You know, it was no longer a luxury, and it was always a necessity for me. And now I have luxuries, you know. When I had 10 years sober, Marguerite, welcome me to the double digits. She said, welcome to the double digits, honey. You know, and that was the first time I went out with for coffee, because I was, you know, just raising kids, just doing meetings and doing all sorts of things, you know, on behalf of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's really for myself, you know, because I reap all these benefits. But it's been great. And how much time do I have? Pete?
2 minutes, something like that.
Perfect. Pete, perfect. Let me just end and say this. I was reading in the grapevine about a man who went back out and he stopped going to meetings, and this is what happened. The steps started to disappear from his life. He no longer worked with others. He no longer practiced these principles in all his affairs. And then he no longer had a conscious contact anymore, or the conscious contact started to go because he was no longer praying and meditating. He had no love and tolerance in his life. As a matter of fact, it had become the opposite, and he was not willing to take that daily inventory, and when he was wrong, promptly admit it. He wasn't taking his own inventory. It was only a matter of time before he started taking others' inventory. And then the shortcomings were no longer his. They were others. And he no longer was able to look at himself. And he no longer practiced God's will. He was in complete self-will. And he wasn't willing. So what happens now is we've already just come down and we're on step two. And now there's no more higher power. And then he picks up a drink. And then he's doomed. And thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Diane. That was wonderful.
Okay. So now we're going to celebrate our birthday. Celebration. So I need Sharon, Maureen.
Sharon and